Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. A little belated, but on behalf of myself and LinuxQuestions.org, I'd like to wish everyone a very happy new year. And as the year comes to an end, it's always a great time to reflect on the year that passed and kind of look forward to the year ahead. 2007 was another great year for LQ as a whole. Just a partial list of accomplishments, we successfully performed our first major code upgrade in a couple of years, and that new backend infrastructure is going to allow us to do many of the things we want to do in 2008. The LQ Wiki hit 3,000 articles, LQ itself hit both 300,000 registered members and 3 million posts. LQ ISO now has facilitated over 5 million downloads, and the list really just goes on and on. And as I just alluded to, we definitely have no plans to slow down in 2008. In fact, we have some very exciting items planned, and we remain committed to making LQ the absolute best it can be. And I have to admit, it's been a fascinating journey since I founded LQ over 7.5 years ago now. I'd like to once again thank each and every member of LinuxQuestions.org, and despite our continually growing numbers and growing size, I think that we remain one of the friendliest communities on the web, and our dedicated mod team is just an absolutely huge and integral part of that, and a special thank you definitely goes out to them. And I've said it in the past multiple times, much of LQ's success is directly contributable to the mods. The next LQ store I have... Just a couple days ago, we opened the polls for the 2007 LinuxQuestions.org Members' Choice Awards. There are 27 polls this year, and that's more than any other year before. Just to give you an idea, last year we had 22. Now, this is the seventh time that we've run the Members' Choice Awards, and we've had a record turnout each and every year. This year, the polls close on February 21st, and I think this is really a chance to help quality open source projects get the attention that they rightly deserve. And we had some extremely close races last year, and I'd expect this year to be no different, so make sure your voice is heard. You can get a link to the Members' Choice Awards right on the LQ homepage, or if you go to the forums, it's the top forum. Lastly, I'm proud to announce that LinuxQuestions.org is once again a sponsor of Scale, which is the Southern California Linux Expo. I've had the pleasure to go to Scale the last few years. It's a great conference. The after conference is always great. And if you're anywhere in the area or are able to put yourself in the area, I highly recommend that you attend. And I myself will be attending once again this year. Here's a small audio spot from the Scale team.
By now, you've probably heard about Linux, but whether you're a pro or have barely heard the word, Scale. The Southern California Linux Expo has something for you. Scale 6X will have over 50 speakers covering the hottest topics in open source software and more than 75 booths this year representing a wide range of commercial products and nonprofit organizations. Don't forget Friday's special sessions with Docs, open source software in the healthcare industry, the Women in Open Source Conference, and new this year is the Open Source Software in Education Conference. The Southern California Linux Expo is February 8th, 9th, and 10th, 2008 at the Westin LAX Hotel in Los Angeles, California. For more information and to register for the expo, visit SoCalLinuxExpo.org. Use promo code CAST, that's C-A-S-T, for 40% off of your registration. We'll see you at Scale.
Now, on to the news. The first story I have is Matthew Zulick resigns as Red Hat CEO and is replaced by an airline COO. Not too long ago, Matthew Zulick somewhat abruptly announced his departure as CEO of Red Hat. He will remain on as chairman of the board, however. It's extremely sad to see that this is a result of a family illness, and I know this is sometimes a euphemism in CEO departures, but in this case, it is legitimate from what I understand. And this is from his post at the Red Hat site. Quote, "After almost a decade of leading Red Hat, I have decided to transition my CEO and president role for the personal reasons I have already discussed. It's my privilege to continue serving the great company in the role of chairman of the board. Red Hat will be in the capable hands of a world-class executive team under the leadership of Jim Whitehurst as president and CEO. My early days at Red Hat were sitting in a small office with no doors in Durham, North Carolina, across from the free soda machine. People by the hour would stop and punch their selection for Mountain Dew or Coke. My challenge was that I was tasked to go and raise venture money for this free software company. And over the phone, in the middle of my sales pitch, corporate types at Dell, IBM, HP, and others would hear the constant banging of soda cans dropping in the soda machine and would ask if there were fights going on outside my office. So, after a while, I told the prospective investors that yes, there were fights going on. And yes, these fights happened frequently. It's how people at Red Hat settled technical issues like software bugs and features in new releases. Red Hat was a real tough place to work. Dell, HP, and IBM became investors because they liked the fighting spirit of Red Hat. End quote. I wish Matthew and his family the absolute best in what has to be extremely trying times here. This is obviously going to be a huge transition for Red Hat itself. Zulik really epitomized the fighting spirit and disruptive nature that embodied Red Hat. The choice of an airline COO as the next CEO is one that will surely draw both fans and critics. And the airline industry in specifics isn't really known for its transparency, which is absolutely key in open source. That being said, however, Jim Whitehurst does seem to have some real technical chops, and it's even been confirmed that he was a Fedora user, which should ease some of the fears that Red Hat employees have to be feeling right now. And that was confirmed that he was a Fedora user before any of this even happened. It also seems, in reading around, that through the entire interview process, Jim has impressed the entire executive team at Red Hat. He has huge shoes to fill, to be sure, as Matthew was not only one of the most successful open source CEOs to date, but a CEO that was liked by the company. Looking back at history a little bit, going outside the tech industry for a CEO has had mixed results in the past. It was a nightmare when a PepsiCo CEO took over the reins at Apple, but worked out well when a Nabisco CEO took over at IBM. How it works out in this case remains to be seen. But the implications, not only for Red Hat, but for open source as a whole, will be absolutely huge. And you can bet many eyes will be watching this one closely. Now, as a follow-up to this is the second story I have, on the record with Jim Whitehurst, Red Hat's new CEO. As you probably expected, when Red Hat made this announcement that Jim Whitehurst, which was the CEO of Delta, would be taking over for Matthew Zulik, there were quite a few skeptics. One of those initial skeptics was Matt Acey. After reading this interview that Matt Acey gave to Jim, I have to admit I'm a bit more optimistic than I was before, and quite clearly from reading his blog, so is Matt. Now here's a couple snippets from that interview. Quote, "Tell me a bit about yourself. What are the last three bands you listened to on your iPod?" Answer, "I don't have an iPod, or a Zune. It won't play Ogg Vorbis files." Next quote, and this is just an answer, partial answer, I didn't include the question on this one. "When the airline industry appeared to be falling apart, Delta CEO asked me to be COO. I had been serving as the treasurer of the company while still at BCG. I became the first finance/strategic guy for a few years and ran Delta for the past 2 years with the company, except for finance reporting to me. I left Delta on good terms. I looked at doing further corporate turnaround work, but I found that I have to have a mission to fuel my work. I can't just work for a paycheck. Just turning around a random company had no interest for me. Red Hat appealed to me. Red Hat is different. By doing well as a company at Red Hat, we are doing good. Open source is a way to focus on the customer, letting us grow, succeed, and change the technology landscape, all while doing something that is fundamentally good. Fighting for open standards and open formats, these things will change society. I'm thrilled to be here." Next, quote, "When I look at the quality of our existing technology and the incredible brand that we have and the markets we play in, we should be a $5 billion company or more. If you just look at operating systems and middleware, that's nearly a $100 billion business. We are a $500 million business. We have barely scratched the surface. We need to figure out what our fair share of each market should be and aggressively go after that. We need to make sure we nail the markets we're already in. I'm not saying we won't go broader, but we really need to ensure that we're building our presence in our core markets and technologies. Perhaps we need to set our ambitions a little bit higher." And the final snippet. "You just became leader of the free world. You also must appease Wall Street, which cares less about freedom of code and more about certainty of profits. How do you balance the two, developers and investors?" Answer, "I actually don't think it's a hard line to walk at all. If you fundamentally believe, which I do, that open source is a superior way to develop software, then that is our mission and that's what we're going to do. There will always be distractions. suggestions that we should make a product proprietary, the idea that we can get to revenue faster by adding proprietary this or that, but we fundamentally believe this is a better way to build a software business. The two groups are appeased together. It's all about serving your core constituency, the customer. End quote. Now, I do suggest that you read the entire interview, but I really like what he's saying from both a technical and a business perspective. And it's good to see that he seems to have very good chops on both sides and seems to really fundamentally understand both sides. And he really seems to get open source, which I have to admit I was a little surprised by. I'd say that under Jim, there's a very good chance that we'll see Red Hat become the first pure-play $1 billion open source company. From there, the sky's the limit. The next story I have is No More SCOX. And it looks like SCO has finally been delisted from the NASDAQ. The ticker is now SCOXQ.PK, and it's on the OTC board. And this is from the SCO Received NASDAQ Notice Letter press release from the SCO site. Quote, the SCO Group, a leading provider of Unix software technology and mobile services, today announced that it received a NASDAQ staff determination letter on December 21st, 2007, indicating that, as a result of having filed for protection under Chapter 11 of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code, the NASDAQ listing qualification panel has determined to delist the company's securities from the NASDAQ stock market and will be suspending trading of the securities effective on the open of business on Thursday, December 27th, 2007. End quote. And it's been a wild and crazy ride, to be sure. And while it's not completely over yet, this surely marks the beginning of the end. It's interesting, I think, to see that they still consider themselves a quote-unquote leading provider of Unix software technology. If they had focused on Unix software technology instead of absurd litigation in the first place, it's very possible this letter would have never been delivered. The last story I have is McAfee issues warnings over quote-unquote ambiguous open source licenses. To me, it looks like the recent Software Freedom Law Center filings may have had some impact on how companies think about open source. And this is from a recent Information Week article. Quote, McAfee frequently cautions other companies about the latest bugs and computer viruses, but the security software maker is now warning that its own business could be in jeopardy, not from some form of malware, but from the fact that its products rely heavily on open source software. In its recently published annual report, McAfee warned investors that the ambiguous license terms governing the open source software it uses may result in anticipated obligations regarding our products. To the extent that we use open source software, we face risks, McAfee warned. McAfee said it's particularly troubling that the legality of terms included in the GNU GPL, the most widely used open source license, have yet to be tested in court. Use of GPL software could subject certain portions of our proprietary software to the GPL requirements, which may have adverse effects on our sales of the products incorporating any such software, McAfee said in the report filed last month with the SEC. Among other things, the GPL requires that manufacturers who in their products use software governed by the license distribute the software source code to end users or customers. End quote. Now, this seems like a little bit of FUD to me, promulgated by a company worried about its business model. Now, keep in mind that it's always an option to not use open source code. It seems to me that McAfee wants to enjoy all the benefits that come with open source code without giving anything back and without having to fulfill the requirements of using that code. And the fact that the GPL code is good enough that they want to use it in the first place, I think, should speak volumes. Just how long would it take them to rewrite all that code from scratch and as good, and what would the associated costs of that be? There is no free ride, nor should there be one. The fact is, if more secure operating systems that actually treated security as a first-hand citizen, and I should note I'm not just talking about Linux here, if those become more prevalent, companies like McAfee are in big trouble. Suddenly, the reason they exist isn't needed anymore. And if you're them, that has to be troubling. Now, addition to this, I really find it interesting that some companies continue to insist that open source code and security are in opposition. I think in the long run, it should be obvious why peer-reviewed code would end up more secure. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.